entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, I will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, our topic today, it's a story of illness and sibling love. Now, from early childhood, our guest, Sally Lockridge, has been drawn to artistic pursuits. And as her own children grew older, she became able to pursue her art full-time and has said she was fortunate to study with excellent painters and teachers, primarily at the former Round Top Center for the Arts. Sally has also authored or co-authored several books and used art as a central mode of expression and communication. Now, when she was practicing child psychologist, together with two of her colleagues, she incorporated many of her drawings in three children's books on family change. Now, in the last 3 years, she has written and illustrated two more books. Her latest, which we are featuring on the show today, Daniel and His Starry Night Blanket. It is that story of illness and sibling love. Sally, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Alan.
Well, I've had a chance to go through the book, and I really like the way in which you've put together a story that really touches on something that unfortunately many of us, you know, today either go through or know somebody that goes through. And so I guess my first question is, I mean, how did you get the idea for this particular book? How did that come to you?
It was an evolution, really, Alan. Originally, I had, as a child psychologist, I had started painting pictures for a book that I had in mind that would be about a little child who, as he grew older, matured, of course, it was to be about a healthy young child, and I was going to show his maturity as it was reflected in his changing use of and need for his essentially security blanket, which is the Starry Night blanket. And then as time went on, and particularly after I had cancer myself, I decided I would shift the focus. And I changed it to the story, the same young boy growing during a few years of his early life, but I decided to make him this young sibling of a girl with cancer. From my own work in psychology, as well as my time as a mother of young kids, I know how much what happens to one child impacts everybody else in the family and the parents as well. I knew that there were a lot of materials for children in families that were the ill children, whether they had cancer or cystic fibrosis or another serious thing. And so I decided to turn to the siblings.
Now, and you mentioned that you started because you were illustrating books. You were using your art, and I had a chance to go to your website, and I saw just an incredible amount of really, really beautiful art. And so, I see this as someone who's really taken various tools within your own artistic area, both from a drawing and, you know, painting standpoint to also a writing standpoint, and add that with the psychologist, and I think we have something that is very unique and very dynamic. And in fact, as I mentioned, the website, let me share with everybody, for those of you that are sitting at a computer and you want to follow along with us or you want to see some of the things that we're talking about, you can go to Sally's website, and I'm going to spell it for you because it's different than what you might think. If you go to Sally Lockridge, but it's SallyLockridge.com, you'll be able to see just a variety of different ways in which you share your art with everybody. So again, if everybody can just go open up another, you know, open up another window. Now, obviously, if you're driving out there, don't try this, okay? and if you would like to comment, I appreciate the fact you've already sent emails. You can call in to 323-203-0815 if you have a question directly for Sally. So, now, Sally, getting back to the book, you talked a little bit. I didn't know that you had also gone through cancer. And, you know, do you share any traits with any of the characters within the story?
Well, I'm pretty creative. And as a mother, just like the mother I created in the story, I think I was pretty patient with my children. I have an older sister, just like the little boy in the story has. Daniel has an older sister, Kate, who's the one who gets ill. But that's really as close as I can get consciously to the story.
Well, and as I had mentioned about the uniqueness, the book being so unique. Now you mentioned that you saw some other books out there, or you saw that there were things directly for the child who was going through the illness. Was there anything in your practice or whatever that made you say, I think the people that we need to be reaching now are those people, the siblings, the other people around the person who's actually going through the illness. What sort of drew you to that?
That's a good question. Yeah. In my practice, I worked with children individually, with adults individually, but also with whole families. And when there was a seriously ill or disturbed child in a family, I often would hear from the parents about how the other children might be upset, they might be scared or worried, they might feel alone or left out. If we take the case of an ill child, let's say someone that has cancer or something else that's really a catastrophic and perilous illness, there are going to be multiple medical appointments, testings, laboratory tests, and once diagnosis is made, treatment appointments. Attention from the parents naturally is going to flow to the ill child. And quite naturally, too, healthy kids can feel left out, in part maybe because they're not getting quite as much as attention as they normally would get, but also because of their own imagination, perhaps even feeling that they caused their sibling's illness.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point when you talk about their imagination. You know, when you see things on television or you hear a lot of the doom and gloom that's going out there, if you're being kept in the dark over something that's this close to home, I think you're right. I think our imagination is probably going to make it much worse than maybe it really is.
That's right. Kids can use their imagination to fill in any gaps. They may, perceive the elephant in the living room if the parents haven't told the ill child or them what's going on.
Yeah,
so they may think that the illness is a punishment for bad behavior or, in the case of the sibling, that they caused it. So it's really important that parents find ways to talk with their children about these very hard situations in ways that they'll understand.
Yeah, and now, which brings up the point about the way in which they'll understand. So, what are the differences in the way in which, there has to be a difference in the way in which you would talk to a very, very young child rather than how you would deal with it with your teenager. So, what are some of the differences or what are some of the stages that you might go through to bring this information forward?
Well, let's talk specifically about cancer, but it also could apply to some other very serious illnesses. When kids are say, just newborn, certainly, to maybe around age 3, they really can't understand cancer. They need to be reassured that you're not going to be abandoned at mm-hmm. home or at the hospital if you're the ill child. They really can't understand the kinds of procedures that their sibling may need to go through. But they still should be told about it in simple and reassuring words. For a child that's in the hospital a lot, a young sibling may fear that their older sibling, Kate in this case, is going to have uh-huh. to stay at the hospital forever.
Uh-huh.
So in early years, they just don't understand. Now, when you get to be maybe 3 to 7, around then, they can understand cancer in a simple way. And they're going to look for a cause. They want to know what made her get sick or what made me get sick. And so they need to be reassured that they didn't cause the illness.
Uh-huh.
So it's just a progression there. Now, when you get to be, say, 7 to 12 to, you know, preteen, they can understand in a much more detailed way, and uh-huh. they're less likely to believe that, you know, they did something to cause the illness in their sibling.
Now,
and
how
they also, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was going to say, how is it different today than it was many years ago? And I can look back to mm-hmm. myself being that age and having an aunt that we were told had leukemia, and the information that was provided either through the media or through anyone that we talked to was, it was an automatic death sentence. In other words, if you said the word cancer, that person mm-hmm. was no longer going to be around. Now, we know that today that's not the case.
That's right.
That's right.
And so we have to kind of update how we might talk to children. The other thing is that there are so many advertisements and things on the internet, on television, which children watch far too much, so that they're going to see and hear references to cancer, which may scare them.
Uh-huh.
Or they may think that the kind of cancer talked about and medication talked about in a particular ad is the same as what's going on in their family. So they need to be not only reassured, but have that information corrected. I think a key thing is to, if you're a parent, listen to what the kids are saying. Listen to what they're asking. Don't just give them a treatise on everything that's known about a particular type of cancer. It's responding to what they're asking.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense, because as soon as you said that, I started to think about the fact that we're now seeing a lot more television commercials in regards to cancer. And so,
that's right.
You know, why wouldn't you have maybe a teenager say, well, you know, how come they're not taking this treatment? Because the advertisement says that this treatment has a 72% success rate, not realizing that there are so many different variations of cancer that may not be the correct treatment.
And even adults make that same error in their hope to find a solution, a treatment, survival. We need to watch or understand what our kids are watching and hearing, so that we can help them get a sense of it more in context. Another thing that I think parents can do is, once they've shared with the kids what's going on, in ways that are developmentally appropriate, they can say to the kids, let us know if you hear anything about this on television, or someone says something at school, or you see it in a book, and that way you can have some way to understand what they're being exposed to.
Well, and even more so, I think, I mean, that's a great idea, because they can feel like they're helping. I mean, to be able to
come home
and say, you know, I just learned that, you know, my friend Kathy's cousin, you know, does studies on this type of thing, and they said you know, whatever.
Yes, right.
You know, now, and I think, you know, that helpless feeling, you know, when you're around anybody, that is going through something that you don't feel like you can help, being able to help like that, I think that's a great idea.
Right, and there are other things that the kids can be involved in. It's important that the parents stay in the adult role and not in their own distress succumb to being the child and letting an empathic child in a way become your caregiver. But at the same time, there are lots of ways in which kids can be involved in the care of their sibling, or the, let's say, the play aspects, finding new ways that the kids can be together. Let's suppose that Kate, like in my book, that the ill child didn't feel well all the time and was not able to be as active as she usually was. Well, parents can help the siblings find ways to spend time with her, quiet pursuits. In the book, you'll see a picture where Daniel has brought in all his markers and crayons to Kate's room, and they're sitting on her bed drawing together. That's an example of where he's helping.
Sure.
But finding new ways as coached, essentially, by his parents.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. And yeah, it's, you know, if he realizes that she may not be in a position to play, you know, soccer with him, but she certainly is in a great position to be able to draw. So that makes sense. Now, in the book, why is the Starry Night blanket so prominently featured? What made you make that such a central point?
Well, I know from reading to my own kids several decades ago when they were young how much fun kids have on looking for a thread running through the story, a visual thread, or it could be an auditory, you know, a rhyme or something that's repeated frequently. So I had the Starry Night blanket there as a thread through the story. You might have also noticed that Kate, I think in every picture, is wearing red heart earrings.
Uh-huh.
Again, that was another thing intended for the children, so they could, there's Kate, where are her earrings, or there they are. And parents can, as you read to children, you can say, do you see anything the same, or what's different, or does Kate have her earrings on, or does the blanket look different? It's a way to engage people, and especially children, with the book.
Yeah, and I thought that was excellent. In fact, it's interesting. When I was reading it, I went and I dug out of a drawer a small red heart, and I have it with me, and I set it out knowing I was going to do the interview. I set the little red heart out as a reminder of the red earrings.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. And the blanket's also a symbol of Daniel's increasing maturity as his attention and connection to a change. As he gets older, he doesn't need it as much. Another thing that happens for families that are going through these journeys of illness, that one or more of the kids may regress in their behavior. They may need their Starry Night blanket or their teddy bear or their other security item more than they did a week ago, or before the diagnosis, whether of them or of the sibling. So making adjustments for that and letting the child hold on, if you will, when they're going through a hard time, that's important.
Yeah, one of the things that it reminded me of, and one of the things that we do, or one of my companies does, is we transport at-risk youth to specialized programs. And I remembered a particular child, and that's happened multiple times, but a particular child that we were transporting to a program, and he had been acting out. And while we were driving him to another state, he started really opening up, and we learned about his sibling that had a life-threatening disease. And one of the quotes that stuck in my mind was, he said, "I felt invisible at home."
That fits right within what I'm talking about.
Yep.
You know, yeah. It happens even in the strongest of families, it happens.
Right.
And then imagine if the family is a single parent family, or it's dysfunctional in some way. There are other pre-existing problems, whether they're abuse or poverty or just all kinds of hard things. And then you add to that the stress of one of the kids being really ill. That makes it even harder for the parents or the parent to juggle and balance the needs of all the kids.
Yes, and in this situation, the other child, to get noticed, began acting out, began doing drugs, began doing things that was drawing attention. Mm-hmm. Although negative attention, it was drawing attention that obviously made life much more difficult for everyone in the family. But that's one of the things that I liked in regards to your book was that by recognizing this, you know, by the parents recognizing this ahead of time, you know, that they can involve the other child to a point in which they won't, in this case, feel invisible or feel like all of the attention is going in one direction.
Yes, it's so important for the adults in the situation to recognize and acknowledge the really intense feelings these young kids may have. I mean, one of the things that's true of very young kids is they express their emotions largely through their behavior. They may not be able to link a word with an emotion. As they get older, they learn to do that, in part because parents are helping them make those connections and labels. But let's say a young child, a 3-4-year-old like Daniel, regresses in his behavior because he's anxious, because he's scared, because Kate's getting so much attention. So one of the things that parents need to do is to help the kids understand how they're feeling, accept the feelings, but at the same time maintain reasonable behavioral expectations for the young child. Being out of control can be really scary.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so you want to hold them to some, standards of behavior. Maybe not quite as tightly as one might normally, because this is a stressful time, but you don't want the child to feel or become out of control.
Well, yeah, and then, you know, I mean, how does that work then with, again, with where you have multiple children in the home?
Right.
You know, where do you draw that line? How does somebody feel like, well, how come the rules are different for this child than they are for this child? What are some thoughts in regards to how you make sure that's balanced?
Yeah, I made my book simple in a way with only the two children, but I wanted to be able to tell the story as clearly as I could. But if there are multiple children, you know, more than two, as there often are, again, I think being honest with the kids is really important, and explaining to the kids, let's say there's a child that's really young that's regressing. You can explain to an older child, we're given, you know, Susie a little leeway here because she's really struggling with what's going on, but we still are going to keep her safe. We still have rules for her. We still have consequences, just like we do for you. Let's say the sick child may not have quite as many rules right during the acute phase of the illness. Again, giving some slack when the situation is pretty overwhelming for the sick child.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break right now. Again, for everybody out there, we are talking with Sally Lockridge, and it's a story of illness, but it's also a story of sibling love. So stay with us. We will be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our guest today is Sally Lockridge. And we are talking about her latest book, which is Daniel and His Starry Night Blanket. Sally, while we were on commercial, we had another email that came in. And I'd like to read this one. It's actually very touching. This one reads, "My best friend's daughter died of childhood leukemia at the age of 14. They traveled back to Israel when she was 5 because the U.S. doctors had given up. She lived for another 9 years and was an angel to the very end. With 3 younger brothers, she was an example of love, patience, and fortitude. The boys are grown now, but they travel from the U.S. back to Israel each year to celebrate her life. It is amazing the impact she had on everyone she crossed paths with."
That is such a poignant story about the power of love among siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And the enduring impact of a loss of illness and a loss like that has on the family, on all the children.
Yeah, yeah, it's very touching. And thank you for the person who shared that story. We appreciate it very much, as I believe most of the listeners will appreciate it as well. I know we were talking about a little bit about the balance before the break. And, you know, share with our audience some of the ways in which Daniel's parents in the book are able to balance their attention between the two children.
Well, let me take an example that just sort of springs off of our discussion just a minute ago about behavior. On one page of the book, Daniel, he's a little kid who loves to play with his trucks and cars. He's making noises as he's racing these small cars around, imagine the living room. And his sister is sleeping. And the dad gets angry because he wants Daniel to be quiet so Kate can sleep. Well, and for parents to have reactions and some negative feelings, that's normal, too, in situations uh-huh. like this. It really is. But what this dad does is that he then turns it into essentially a teaching moment. The next day, he had planned a special trip with his son, just father and son, to a baseball game. They uh-huh. both loved baseball. And so he kept the commitment that they were going to go to the game. But then, and at the game, they're yelling and screaming and cheering for their favorite team. In the car on the way home, he says to his son, "You know, noise is great sometimes, and other times it's important to be quiet." And he reminds him of how it's important to be quiet if Kate is sleeping, but that if you're at the ball game, it's great to yell and cheer. So he neutralized it, if you will, that it wasn't that noise was bad. It was that you have to pay attention to the situation. And then he said, I don't have that page in front of me, but something like, "I'll help you if you forget." So he's saying, "I'm there for you, son."
Yeah,
so that's one example.
Yeah, and it's a great example because, you know, had he the morning before just, you know, shouted or in a negative fashion, you know, "You need to be quiet right now,"
mm-hmm.
you know, that's working against the child, that's shutting him down,
mm-hmm.
you know, versus, as you said, he took it as an opportunity to educate, you know, the differences between the two environments. So I think that makes great sense.
Mm-hmm.
So now, you know, again, I mentioned earlier that, you know, we've transported some kids who have gone to specialized programs, and in some cases, you know, they spoke to us about the fact that they had acted out. They think part of their acting out was tied directly to the fact that they weren't getting much attention. What are some of the warning signs that parents can see out there that the sibling may need professional help over and above what the parents are able to give?
If their behavior really regresses so much that they're really having trouble just kind of getting through a day, if they're crying a huge amount, if they're just needing physical contact all the time. All kids need physical contact and affection and connection. But again, a magnification or a regression in their usual behavior and way of just being day to day that can say, time to go talk to a professional, maybe starting with a pediatrician, but then as needed, perhaps seeing a therapist, a social worker, an art therapist, a psychologist. There are lots of helping professions out there.
Now, I mean, one of the things and again, that the book sort of touches on it, but I think that there may be people out there with questions in their own mind is, you know, how much detail do you think the parent should share with the child, with the one who has the illness, and how does that differ from what's shared with the child who doesn't?
Another great question. A lot of parents, I think, may protectively feel like, oh, let's not tell the child they have cancer or another catastrophic illness. They feel it's protecting their child by not sharing a diagnosis. But kids pick up on anxiety in parents. They're sensitive to what's going on just by looking at how their parent look at each other or how they look at the child. They know something is going on. So to share, I think it's always important to share with the child. Now, if the child is one, that's a whole different thing.
Right. But
if the child is three and up, certainly telling them. And we mentioned before that if they're not told, they may use their imagination and to create something far worse than what is actually happening. It might cause them extra anxiety and stress and fear. Kids know something's wrong. If they're not feeling well or they see their sibling not feeling well, they're going to wonder about why are we going to the doctor so much or why is my sister being taken off to the doctor so much or to the hospital. So it's really putting words to what the kids already know at some level, albeit probably a magnified and worse scenario than what they're going to get told.
Yeah, and I think for people to kind of visualize this in their own mind is, you know, think about when you watch a movie. Movies are written in such a way that, you know, your imagination is usually going to add much more drama and much more than what's actually happening. You know, and that's kind of considered good movie making, but it's because of the abilities that our imagination has, and you're right, by not telling them, probably going to get something far worse that comes out of their imagination than a more realistic explanation of what's going on.
The elephant in the living room may get far bigger.
Crowd
out just, you know, regular interaction in the family or times to play. Even under these really tough situations, I think it's important that parents try to find times to play with the kids. It may be a briefer time than usual, but if you honor having regular private play with each of the children or facilitating play between the children, you can emphasize involvement and quality and focus even if the time is really short. And to the extent that they can, play actively, be silly, and laugh with your kids.
Uh-huh. Yes. And in this day and age, but with you know, video type games and so many different things, mm-hmm. you know, I would think that, that at most stages there is something that can be done that would be enjoyable to them.
Do you mean for the sick child?
Yes, yes.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, there are things that can be done while you're lying in a bed, be it
exactly.
hospital bed or your own bed. There are video things. There are books, always books. there are more interactive things, drawing, painting, playing physical board games. And one thing for parents that have to be away, let's say stay in the hospital with an ill child and yet there are other kids at home, there's Skype. There are various ways where, let's say, a three-year-old can see his parent or parents every day, even if they're spending 3 weeks in a hospital with another sibling.
That's a great point. Now, what we were talking about as far as, you know, how to disseminate the information, how much information to disseminate. Now, we're talking about the things that are somewhat within our control. How do we deal with those people that are around them and we can't control? Teachers, neighbors, friends. How do we control that? Or can we? I mean, to what degree?
Well, I think to some degree you're right. We can't control all of that. But parents can develop within their own social network, say, neighbors, extended family, teachers. They can talk about having kind of a common way of explaining it to the children. They can encourage the children when someone says something to them that alarms them to let the parents know. And there are professionals who can help with this. In hospitals, there's a profession now called child life specialists who work with families and with children around an ill child's needs, as well as oftentimes having programs for siblings within the hospital. There are a lot of camps now that have sessions for ill children, but they may also have a session when a sibling gets to come. So there are some ways in which the extended network can be pulled in and involved in a very positive and consistent way.
And while we're talking about how other people, and now let's going back to the book, please share with our audience the role that Daniel's grandmother played in mm-hmm. really helping him.
She's a key figure here.
I know.
I didn't make it clear whether she lived with them or not deliberately, but she's certainly a key person in the family, a beloved grandmother. In fact, she was the one who made the Starry Night blanket for Daniel before he was born, as a birth gift, if you will, to him, and wisely knowing that most kids need something very special to hold on to. She serves as a caregiver for Daniel, often when their parents are taking Kate off to appointments or to treatments. She's there to reassure Daniel at certain points. She's understanding of his feelings. There's a time when chemo has started for Kate, and after a while, her hair falls out. And there's a picture where, I just found it here, Daniel began to find pieces of Kate's hair all over the house. And his grandmother, who's observant and caring, she sees Daniel pulling on his own curls. She says gently to him, "Your hair will not fall out." And then Daniel is still worried, and he asks her, "Will I get sick too?" So the grandmother is able to reassure him, to give him a long hug, and so forth. So she serves a very pivotal and important role. But it could be a grandfather, it could be a neighbor, it could be a grown sibling. The other way in which she helps is in the end, and I don't want to give away the end of the book.
I've purposely kind of avoided that part, but I completely agree with you.
But she's very involved in a creative gesture, if you will, that Daniel makes toward Kate at the end of the story. She's right there with him.
Yeah, and I thought that was it was very nice the way in which that works into it. But I also, I mean, I guess what I want to tell everybody that's out there is, as you're reading this, if you are going through something like this, you know, I sort of put myself in that place, and then you sort of feel with them when you see, oh, this was nice. You know, I can see how this would make somebody feel better. I mean, the book really is a journey, and I think that's the part that can touch a lot of people.
That's right. It is a journey. The whole family is journeying through this illness with Kate. But I deliberately, rather than just have a recitation of the feelings that siblings might have when this happens, I wanted it to be a story of the family and to show several years, albeit in a condensed way in a picture book, but to show several years of Daniel's development as the whole family is on this journey. Another thing that happens in the story that was very deliberate on my part, but I wanted him to get a lot of reassurance. And at some point, he's feeling not only left out, but like they don't love him as much. He doesn't get the kinds of presents and gifts and cards and attention that Kate gets. But his mom is able to reassure him, and this has to happen repeatedly in any family, that they love Daniel and Kate just the same. But she gives an example of saying that sometimes one person needs extra help, like you do with reading now and Kate does with getting better. So again, to say we love you, but there are distinctions in ways in which we may show it or exhibit it.
That's beautiful. And speaking of something that's beautiful, we have another email that's come in. This one reads, I'm a pediatric nurse in a large hospital, and no matter how many years we have been in this field, losing a child so affects all of our staff so deeply. Last week, after receiving the press release, I bought and read your incredible book. I was so moved by the beautiful way it dealt with this very emotional and tragic topic. I just wanted to express our thanks for providing such a wonderful and needed resource. It will be shared.
Oh, I thank you. I'm so sad to hear about situations like that every time it happens. But I'm so glad that the book could resonate with all those folks that are working in that particular hospital with the child and the family. They deserve support and they need it.
Well, and yes, and as I read it, I felt the same way, and I felt, you know, this is somebody who is chosen a profession in which they know that they're going to have to deal with situations like this. So I commend them just for that.
That's right. They deserve support and accolades.
Exactly, and then to take something like this with this book and recognize the value of it and then share it with the families. In other words, it was not only did she express the fact of how much she felt it helped them, those that are in the hospital working, but that they already recognized the value to share it directly with the families because they see what they're going through. I mean, I just think it's so wonderful.
I do too, and she's touching on the two parts of the audience that I envision for the book, and one, of course, is the families. Like most other picture books, you read picture books with young children. Daniel can't read yet. He's trying to learn, but he can't read yet, and this is the kind of book for adults to read with the child, to leave out for them to look through multiple times. So the family is one component of the audience, and certainly for the ill children to be able to read it. They may learn to understand why their little brother or sister is crabby or more angry or doesn't want to play with them or, you know, has some other unique behavior that wasn't there before. So it may help the kids get along better. Now, the second major part of the audience, I hope, is the professionals.
Yes. Like
the woman that so kindly and bravely shared what was going on for her, took the time to share what was going on for her as a pediatric nurse. It's to help support the professionals, but also to help them understand perhaps a little bit more what it can be like to be in one of these families and what it can be like to be a sibling.
Yes, it's very, very touching. I just looked over and I realized we've got about 4 minutes. I want to make sure and touch on some things. One of which is that you have a blog that you've created a blog that's called Cancer Savvy. It's CANCERSAVVY. Is that correct?
Not exactly. Oh. I wrote a guest blog for Cancer Savvy. Cancer Savvy is a blog here in Maine.
Gotcha.
Okay, but I did a guest blog for them. I've also done some for some other blogs. There's a wonderful, I guess it's a blog, called Children's Books Heal by Patricia Tilden, T-I-L-T-O-N, and she reviewed the book on there. And there's a whole stream of, you know, 50 comments about her review and the book with some questions and responses. So I am doing my best to get the book to those that might help and entertain any questions or comments that people have about it. You can get it through Amazon, through my website directly. If the folks have gone to my website, like you suggested at the beginning of this interview, there's a books page where it has this book plus the earlier book that was created from a series of paintings I did when I was in radiation for breast cancer a few years ago. And that was published by the American Cancer Society. This one I published myself.
Well, so let me give that site again. Again, for anybody out there, you know, if you can write this down, if you're driving and you can't, you can always go to our Answers for the Family site, and we will have this information there as well. But if you go to sallylockridge.com, it's sallylockridge.com. You can go to the whole site. If you go to /books or click on books, you'll be able to see all of the books. Sally, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for putting out this information that I think is written in such a way that you know, and I'm very thankful that I'm not going through this and haven't gone through this with a child, but I still felt very touched while I was reading it. You know, I felt like I could feel with this, you know, this family, and kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel. So thank you for putting it out there.
Yeah, I think just briefly, neighbors, friends of the family could read this book with their own children and get a better sense of what the affected family is going through, just like you were touched by it.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. So thank you, and again, for everybody out there, thank you for listening. Thank you for being with us. You know, if you find us, if you're listening to us through iTunes or through Stitcher, if you leave a comment for others, leave a comment about Sally's book. You know, let people who go to those sites now see what you thought of that particular show or, you know, or how to reach that particular book. So, like us on Facebook, on LinkedIn, and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family. Thank you, Sally.
You're welcome.
Bye now.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.